This is the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media. Now, here's Jason Jones.
Aloha, everybody, and welcome to the Jason Jones Show. I am your host, Jason Jones, broadcasting from the sunny and beautiful hill country of Texas. And joining me live, magandang hapon, Marilis, is Marilis Pinera, VPP.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, Marilis. How are you?
Hello.
Okay, hold on. This episode is being brought to you by Epoch Times. Go to iReadEpoch.com, and for the first month, for only a dollar, you can check out the best newspaper in the world when you use the code Jason Jones. And of course, as always, this episode is being brought to you by the Vulnerable People Project, standing in solidarity with the most vulnerable people in the world when the world is left, from the child in the womb to the child in Chinese-occupied East Turkestan, to the families in Afghanistan, to Catholics in Nigeria. Go to thegreatcampaign.org, and if you donate this week, every dollar will be doubled up to $30,000. And I'm leaving this week for the Middle East, so it's important that I have make sure everything that we need to be covered in the next 60 days is covered, because 30 days on the road, I am our development director, by the way. I'm not only the host of this show. I run VPP, but we don't have a development director. So go to thegreatcampaign.org and become a monthly donor. Marilis, this is why the show exists today.
Yeah.
I started the Jason Jones Show, like 300 episodes. We have more episodes of the Jason Jones Show than Friends, than Seinfeld, da-da-da. I started this show so I could talk about what we're about to talk about today when the world is looking at it like jiggling keys. And I just wanted a place that I could rant. We built a substantial audience by God's grace. So we're going to rant to folks all over the world about something that is very important, and it's going to be lost in the shuffle over the coming days.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people haven't even really heard about it, what we're going to be talking about.
Yeah, so what we're talking about, guys, today is Congress held, the House held hearings on the catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan. And we know, because Marilis and I watched it, Armin Chakmakian on our team watched it, we all watched it. How many people were viewing this hearing on the House channel, which the House channel on C-SPAN was the only place to watch it? How many folks in the world were watching the hearings today? You could see that.
I was looking, it was around 330
people. 330
people
watching a hearing. Watching a hearing on the fruit, the poison fruit of $2 trillion, thousands of American lives and countless Afghan lives in a catastrophe that ended in a horrible way. The biggest military blunder in maybe American history, maybe world history. I don't know what you could compare in the world, this catastrophe. So this is going to be our reaction. And by the way, it was much more emotional than I expected. I mean, my blood was boiling. At points, I was crying. So, where should we begin?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm still processing the whole thing. I told you earlier after I watched it, it felt like I needed to sit in a dark room and just think about what I had just listened to and watched. You know, I mean, my heart really goes out to the witnesses, especially the Vargas Andrews, Sergeant Vargas Andrews.
The Marine sniper.
Yeah, who was there for the bombing at Abbey Gate. Francis Wong, how he spoke about, you know, how this is personal to him, having been flown out of, Saigon as a child with his family. So how his, you know, work in Afghanistan is very personal in that way of wanting to remain loyal to our allies. It very much kind of, you know, rings true to why we do the work that we do at VPP. Lieutenant Colonel Mann, and talking about, you know, his work with Pineapple Express, and then just the different questions and things that the Congress people on Congress and the committee talked about. I mean, it was just so much to take in. And this was just the first hearing. This isn't going to be the only hearing. This is just the first hearing.
Yeah.
And I think it was Congressman Perry who kept repeating, you know, there really needs to be an accountability. The State Department needs to be brought forth for questioning. Just on and on, like everything that, you know, you have been talking about for months and months and months.
Yeah.
How there needs to be an accountability. I mean, from the moment I've met you and began working with you as VPP, like this has been, there needs to be an accountability has been coming out of your mouth from the very beginning. So just hearing it and seeing it take place is, you know, I really can't think of a word.
The bill always arrives. The bill has arrived.
Yeah.
And you know, mm-hmm. when I, going back to August of 2021, and I want to do a 30,000 foot view here real quick of everything for you guys. But when in the beginning of August, I had American citizens trapped in Afghanistan begging me to go on Fox News. They wanted to call Fox News from there. They wanted to attack the State Department from there. And I said, in the Biden administration, I said, guys, no, evacuation, get you home, then retribution. We'll have plenty of time for retribution. And the time for retribution has arrived. But here's the 30. This is the big thing I got from the hearing. Number one, the American people are beautiful. The American people are unlike any other people that have ever lived. There's an American exceptionalism, but the American exceptionalism is for the American people. And our government, though, not as exceptional as we would hope. So you had all these representatives of veterans groups, and, you know, there were countless veterans groups. Some groups formed from soldiers just to rescue their translator. Other groups were formed to save entire units. Some groups were formed from evangelical Christians to rescue their religious communities. All American civilians rescuing Afghans with no help from the U.S. State Department. So the one thing I got was the American people were incredible. But then the other thing I got, and I shouldn't say this because I'm going to lose some of you, but you need to listen to the whole show. The Democrat Party is childish and diabolical. You could know who the Democrat was. I did not know the party affiliation of these folks. Before they even answered or asked a question, I knew who the Democrat members of the House were by the tone in their voice, which was condescending and deceptive. The Republicans, who had every reason on the committee to place blame on, they could have just thrown this like a dead carcass on Biden's feet. They did not. They did not. They were thoughtfully probing the guests of the panel for information, trying to get to the bottom of what happened. And I did not see any cheap shots from Republicans. The Democrats, who their president and their administration is responsible primarily for this catastrophe, not solely. There is truth in that Trump, Obama, and Bush all had a hand in a $2 trillion grift in a country that collapsed, actually 85% of the country collapsed 8 weeks before we even left to the Taliban. So there's some truth in that. But the Democrats obsessed on Trump. They placed blame on, I didn't hear the Republicans place blame on anyone, but I heard the Democrats blame the Afghan people. They blamed the veterans groups. Tell me if I'm lying. That did the rescuing. They blamed Trump, of course. But the lowest moment was when the one member of Congress, I'm going to look up her name right here.
I think it was Congresswoman Wild.
Yes. Okay. Was it her?
Probably, yeah.
She said, no, it's Congresswoman Titus.
Yeah.
Congresswoman Titus, Democrat, said to the veterans that were there, "You're so smart." She literally said that. Well, you're so smart. But hindsight is 20/20. What did you do to warn the president that withdrawing was going to be catastrophic? Do we not have an intelligence community that gets billions of dollars? You're asking civilians? It's like asking civilians who put out a fire because the fire department didn't show up. You're so smart. You're so smart. Why didn't you tell us that the warehouse district in town was unsafe? Well, because I'm not the fire marshal. But, you know, when I saw a fire, I went there with the rest of the community and we put out the fire because the fire department didn't show up. But there was that kind of condescension. Blaming the Afghan people. No doubt there was corruption, but we were the ones doing the corrupting. Anyway, did I for the folks listening, am I exaggerating? Did they not blame the Afghan people?
They absolutely blamed the Afghan people.
Yeah, unbelievable.
My mouth dropped when she said that.
Yeah.
Just the audacity. And this is after one of the witnesses had just been talking about how one of the Afghans that he was working with was saying, you know, what do I do? My wife is getting beaten by the Taliban. What do I do?
Yeah. So guys, I'm going to in the show notes, I'm going to put the entire hearing. We're going to clip it up as well, but it's 2 hours long. I don't know if this show is going to be up before we're going to have our clips from the hearing cut up. But as many members of the panel said, you know, it was surreal. You'd get calls from people saying, I'm dying today. Thank you for all the help you did. You really did your best, sir. Thank you. I had people shot as I was talking to them. There were people that I was talking to before the Abbey Gate explosion that disappeared after the Abbey Gate explosion that we were trying to get through the fence. And all the groups that were working on this experienced similar things. People were calling us because their friends were caught and set on fire. I would walk around the grocery store for months and months. I would say, I mean, maybe just in the past couple of months, I feel normal. But in the initial months, I would work all day, all night, but every day at 9 o'clock, I would go to the local grocery store and just walk around and look at people. And I would get a fresh squeezed orange juice, and I would come home and I would drink the fresh squeezed orange juice. And I was just so out of sorts. And to know that I wasn't alone, that there were so many other people that were doing this. Some in very small ways and in very intimate ways. It was their best friend, their cousin, their interpreter. They were trying to get to safety, and usually they failed. As one member on the panel said, only 1%, or no, I'm sorry, 10% of the people we tried to rescue, we rescued, 90% died.
Yeah.
And then the Democrats, members of the committee, just come across so thoughtless and condescending, more concerned about politics and image than getting to the truth of what happened. It was repugnant.
That's exactly what came across to me from there, what they were saying. It felt like they were trying to continue to cover up rather than just own up to what happened.
Yeah.
You know, like coming with excuses after excuses as to why it wasn't this administration's fault.
No. No, okay, and let's do this. Is another 30,000 perspective I got. There's a big lie. And the Democrat members of this committee are participating still in gaslighting the American people in the big lie. And what is the big lie? That they knew. They knew long before August of 2021 that Afghanistan was falling. They knew long before. And as I always tell people, if you listen to the show, you've heard me say this point. Marilis, you've heard me say this thousands of times. In early July, 85% of the districts had already fallen. Districts began falling in April at a catastrophically quick rate. Former Green Berets that we work with said that they were being told to hand the places where they were operating over to the Taliban in July, doing joint patrols with the Taliban. This needs to come out. We need to tell members of Congress, We need to find out about why was Army Green Berets doing joint patrols with the Taliban? And if it was their policy that we're going to give the government over to the Taliban, then why didn't we have a plan in place to remove our SIVs? Okay, we're going to hand the country over to the Taliban, but then there's 180,000 people we need to get out of the country first. And we should have some guarantees for Hazara and other religious minorities. And but clearly that was the plan, right? Clearly, and if that was the plan, why didn't we maintain diplomatic relationship? If the plan was to give the Taliban the country, why have we ceased? What's going on? I mean, other than delivering pallets of cash, which we are delivering, U.S. government to the Taliban, why aren't we working together to ameliorate the suffering left in the wake of the collapse of that country? If the policy was to hand the country over to the Taliban, you can't just give the country over and say, oh, they're terrorists, got to go.
Yeah, it's very sorrowful. And I think it was Congressman Wilson brought that up, how when our troops were there, you know, he had gone back 10 different times. And one of the times he talked about seeing society being built up, you know, children playing. He talked about the little girls with their white hijabs. And now it's just completely, all of that completely dissipated, just gone. All of it just gone.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I was telling you earlier, you know, when the Lieutenant Colonel Mann, when he said, what does an American promise mean today? I think that question that he posed to the committee really sums up this entire thing, because that's what happened. We totally just completely jumped ship and abandoned them.
Yeah, well, I think the Congresswoman Wild gets the award for the most absurd statement of the hearing. Congresswoman Wild, I wrote it down word for word. She gave a litany on we should never support wars, these never-ending wars, these wars that never end.
Well, that's funny.
Yeah. She goes, I categorically reject, and then she goes, this should be a lesson on forever wars. Then she rambles on about wars being horrible and stupid and we've made all these mistakes. Then, .. I categorically reject any comparison to what is going on in Ukraine and the United States support of Ukraine. Okay. By the way, bad day to say that, because Bakhmut fell today. A major city in Ukraine fell today to the Wagner brigades. So the Ukrainian army lost a battle today to a private military group. Okay, not the Russian army. And as we know from our operations in Ukraine, Ukraine is getting batted around by Russia how and when and wherever they want. And this war has long been lost. And yet, I tweeted out on this. I said, dear Ukraine, watch the hearings on the Afghanistan catastrophe to know your future. I look forward to the hearings on the catastrophe in Ukraine next year and listen to how the Democrats blame Trump.
Yeah, that's exactly what's happening. That's what's going to happen. We've already been at it for, what, a year in Ukraine? It'll be a year in April?
I mean, our organization's been in Ukraine, yes, since April. The war started in February. Actually, no, our first van began running the second week after the invasion, our first truck. But anyway, so yeah, the Congressman Mast said, I don't know how the people responsible for the withdrawal from Afghanistan sleep at night. Which is a good question. There was one Democrat that I give some credit to. I think he had some dignity, and he just couldn't outright lie. And I think that was Congressman Keating. And he basically, it was Congressman Keating. He admitted that, you know, he blamed, but he said Biden's responsible. He said this was Biden's. He failed. But we should move along. Da, 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 da. Right.
Yeah. There's a reckoning coming with this. This is just the beginning.
Well, but here's the problem. Today we had the Fauci hearings. We had China hearings. Yeah, so this is going to get lost. And that's why I have this show. Because everyone else is going to... I've been messaging all my Republican friends, all my friends with big shows who remain nameless. They don't want to talk about this. They don't want to talk about this. Congressman Sherman, this is what he said. I know right now, I'm just sound like an angry old man ranting. Like, this isn't a podcast. This is Jason Jones in his closet yelling at the wall right now. Congressman Sherman, he blames the Afghans. And then he blames American civilians who they wandered into a war zone. But here's my, I wish no one called him Congressman Sherman on this. I couldn't get Afghans, American citizens to leave the country early on because they said, Biden said Afghanistan's not going to fall. I'm in Kabul. I'm okay.
Famous last words. There will not be a helicopter flying out of the embassy.
Talking to your phone. Are you doing dishes while I'm talking to you? You're like walking away from the phone.
Who, me?
Yeah. What were you doing?
No, I mean, I'm just putting myself on mute because whenever you're talking.
Oh, okay. No, I'm just ranting here. So, yeah. So Congressman Sherman somehow finds Americans to blame who were in Afghanistan. What did he think Americans were doing in Afghanistan? You know, going to the Sandals Resort? They were there as employees of companies. And the president of the United States said, you'll never see a helicopter on the embassy moment. And then we saw a helicopter on the embassy.
Literally that day.
Oh, I mean, within weeks. Yeah. So how did this impact like the work you've been doing? Because you came on after. Well, oh, here's something else I got from this. And this is where you come in. A lot of these groups, God bless them, they worked furiously. And then the U.S. left. And it was kind of like most of them were like, what can we do now? And that's where VPP was like, we've got this. We're not leaving. We're going to figure some things out. And we have worked to figure things out. But what did you get watching this? I mean, because you were watching hearings on something that happened months. You came in December. So you're listening to what was happening in August. So how did this form your thoughts on the work that you do for VPP as our diplomatic liaison?
I mean, it really just confirmed more the importance of the work that we're doing, specifically when it comes to the resettlement aspect, because, you know, our State Department was dropping the ball in the way in the beginning of this, and they continue to do so. And that's why we had to open our European office. And that's why we're reaching out to different parts of the world to see if they'll help take SIVs and minorities like Hazaras or women. To, you know, to accept them and get them visas and things like that. Because it's been impossible working with our administration's current State Department.
Yeah, I got subpoenaed. Is that what it's called? Deposed. I had to give I had to give information today to our lawyer about some evacuations we did over land. And they were like, well, why did you do these over land? Because the airports were closed and these were not SIVs. These were Christians. Like, what did you want me to do? There was no way out.
Exactly. Or even just an affirmation. You know, I forget which witness it was. I think it was Francois Wong who was talking about how government agencies or different, you know, Congress people have asked him for help with resettlement. And I remember when that was happening with us, I thought, I mean, these are people way bigger than we are, way bigger than our tiny little organization coming to us for help with, you know, getting people out of Afghanistan, and hearing that he was experiencing it too, and other organizations have experienced it as well, was just consoling in a way, you know, kind of what you're saying, like, we're not alone in this. Sometimes it can feel very isolating thinking who else is doing this type of work or might be able to relate to the same frustrations, and it's them.
Yeah, and to watch them break down and cry. Green Berets, or, Army Rangers, exactly. Marine Snipers.
Or when Sergeant Taylor, or Tyler Vargas Andrews, when he talked about how the FBI at NCIS, like, nobody came knocking on his door.
Oh, bring that up. Oh, okay. So bring that up. Share that story. You know what? Oh, my gosh. This is why I usually do the intro after the show, so I can kind of bundle things I don't want people to miss.
Yeah.
But I'll say this, guys, about this show, this audience. I think I break the third wall too much, but here's the deal. The average podcast, 80% of the audience leaves 10 minutes into the show, which is quite interesting. 85% of our audience finishes the entire show, and ours are uber long. But yeah. This is something that's very important. The Marine sniper, who in his testimony shared many things, of which looking through his sniper scope, he was watching women beheaded, children trampled to death and killed, men commit suicide.
Yeah, running into the barbed wire.
Because they'd rather die that way. Suicide. They'd rather be shot by a U.S. Marine or die from barbed wire than tortured by the Taliban. They'd rather fall from a plane than get captured and tortured by the Taliban.
This is a 25-year-old kid.
25-year-old young man, yes. And he said that, now, by the way, now that this came out, a lot of the work we do is developing friendships in a lot of strange places, and it can get a little scary. So there was something that I've shared. I actually shared it on Steve Bannon's show live. Moments after the bombing at Abbey Gate, I told Steve how many casualties they were, where they were, who they were. When the government was reporting, there were no casualties, by the way, no U.S. casualties, which was a lie. And I said on Steve Bannon's The War Room, Steve, there were 13 Americans that are dead. How do you know? I have someone right there with eyes on the situation. And we know. And so the first place it was reported was on Bannon's The War Room by me. This Marine was one of those that was injured. Now, we knew, this is a crazy story. You know the NyQuil story, right?
Yes.
So the night before the Abbey Gate explosion, I hadn't slept in weeks. Now, that doesn't sound real, but it's true. And I just couldn't sleep. My hands were shaking. And I pounded NyQuil. As soon as I took the NyQuil, I felt I killed somebody. The first thought was, I'm like, you dummy, you just killed somebody. And I thought, I need to stay awake. I sat in the guest room. I didn't want TV. My nerves were a wreck. I didn't want music. I didn't want anything. I just sat there like a weirdo. Don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep. Don't fall asleep with all my communication devices around me, different phones, da-da-da, laptop, da-da-da, different, you know, the ways we communicate. I get a message. There's going to be a bombing at Abbey Gate. So how did I know? How did my guys know there was going to be a bombing going off at Abbey Gate? I called people we were hiding at Abbey Gate trying to get Marines to bring them into the airport. So we got this, these people moved. If I was sleeping, they would have been part of those that died. And the main person I was trying to move at the point that I had hiding in Abbey Gate, it's on our website, AfghanAlliedVoices.com. There's a picture of Abbey Gate from them hiding in a little crevice with his pregnant wife and his child. And I said, send me a picture so I can send it to the Marine so he can kind of figure out where you're hiding. But we had to move them. Well, we now know that the CIA had these guys, I think for 72 hours, they knew there was going to be a bombing and they knew what the bomber was going to look like. The Marine had been following this guy for 2 days through his scope, asking for permission to, this is coming out in the hearing right now that you're going to watch in the show notes.
He said he had a great shot at him.
Was told there's 13 dead Americans and 170 dead Afghans. Was told not to shoot the target they told him to look out for. Just observe him. Observe him for what? I mean, for what? What is our government doing? I mean, for what? Was it to observe him to make sure he didn't chicken out? So you needed to send another suicide bomber? Why did they have, what was going on? So he observed him. He was not given permission to take him out. Then he was wounded in the blast. Now, here's the kicker. And you know what? For you leftist trolls, go watch the testimony in the show notes. He says that to this day, NCIS and the FBI has not questioned him. He was blown up in the Abbey Gate attack. And he has never been questioned on what happened. Now, if that is not because they do not want information, it's as if there's a cover-up, as if there's a conspiracy. And watching this hearing, it is as if the deep state got exactly what they wanted. A country to fall, to collapse, to be taken over by the Taliban, and for all the Afghan allies to be stranded and killed. And if not for the heroic actions of American veterans, nobody would have gotten out alive. But what they didn't expect is that American civilians, American veterans, and groups like ours would swing into action and start rescuing people. But why did NCIS and the FBI not interview this guy? It is absolutely unbelievable. And if there's no conspiracy, they work, then they're just absolutely a dereliction of duty.
Yep. Yeah, and it kind of reminds me of some, you know, some people that we've helped that have said similar things.
Yeah, that they think they were left there to die.
Yeah, or that they have, you know, that they have information that our government should want, and our nobody has yet to go calling.
Well, let's talk about Governor Salima Mazzara.
That's exactly who I'm referring to.
So we work with former governor in Afghanistan, Hazara governor, female, first female governor in Afghanistan. On her flight, I want to get to this. This is an important point. On her flight, she saw members of, she saw Al-Qaeda and Haqqani Network on her flight. She walked up to them. This is one of the flights out of Afghanistan, and said, "Why are you going to the United States? You hate America." They said, "For jihad." Okay. We have tried to get her in touch, the FBI in touch with her. She has tried to get in touch with the FBI. She's a former governor. Time Magazine did a cover, a spread on her. BBC had her in top five women of the year in 2020 or 2021. I forget. She's not a crank. The FBI has not reached out to her. I think if a former governor, who, by the way, is a sniper, killed over 200 people, 200 Taliban, if she says, "I saw a known Haqqani and Taliban on my flight," you would at least think she should get an interview. Okay, so bracket. Here's the problem. The Democrats on the committee wanted to make this about, broadly about immigration. They did not want to make this about the our Afghan allies and SIVs. The problem, rightfully so, and I think this is why a lot of conservative outlets don't want to cover this story, is that Biden guaranteed brought terrorists in this country in the collapse of Afghanistan. Guaranteed. No doubt, there are people that were on those flights that are terrorists and that are going to, in the future, commit acts of terror. 100%. And the great tragedy in all of this is that our Afghan allies are going to have the door welded shut in their face because of this. It would be like leaving German Jews in Germany because we loaded planes filled with Nazis and flew them into the United States, is what it would be like. But this is what's sadly going to happen. And you wonder, I mean, you either the Democrat Party is the party of unintended consequences and thoughtlessness, or they are really working to weaken our security and to bring about the collapse of our society in the most dishonorable and ignoble way. That's all I can get from this.
That is absolutely terrifying.
Yeah.
You know, between that, between letting terrorists into our country, and between the 27 extremist groups that are on the rise that they talked about in the hearing, we should absolutely be terrified of the repercussions of what that botched and dishonorable withdrawal did.
Yeah, when you know the Taliban is who's protecting you from really extreme groups in Afghanistan, things have gotten out of control, and that's the reality, yeah. Right? I mean, the reality is the Taliban is battling groups that are more extreme than them.
Exactly.
And it's like what we saw in Iraq with the rise of ISIS.
Yeah.
Where it was Iran and the Shia militias that were saving Christians from the Obama JV team of ISIS.
Yep.
This is the world. Think about this. We left Vietnam. We handed over to the communists, right? Iraq, yeah. Iraq, Obama handed over to ISIS. And if the Democrats would have won and not Trump, Iraq and Syria would have completely collapsed to ISIS. And there would be a war raging between Iran and the Arab, the Shia and the Arab world. It would be a raging war. I mean, there'd be a full-scale war from Yemen to Iran and everything in between. We have the stupid war in Vietnam. We hand Vietnam to the communists. We have the stupid war in Iraq. We hand Iraq to ISIS. And then Biden, on a silver platter with $88 billion in weapons, hands Afghanistan to the Taliban and then turns its back on Afghanistan and says, well, they're bad guys, so we're not going to have anything to do with you other than send you pallets of cash. We need to win the White House. Look, this is about politics, period. All right? We need to win the White House. We need to, the world's it's. They're starting World War III in Ukraine. They're doing to Ukraine, I will give them this. The Democrats really are about diversity and equity. And they're finally doing to to white people what they did to yellow and brown people for centuries. So give them that. As a Filipina, you should give them credit for equity.
I'll give them a little credit.
That's it.
I'm just so frustrated with the current administration. And this just solidified it. Watching it for 2 hours, I sat there for 2 hours just mouth agape. And, a lot of what they were saying were things I knew because of our work, but just hearing it out loud in an official capacity it just solidified so much of what we've been doing the past year and why we've been doing our work the past year.
And why we won't quit. And, and the fact that this isn't getting any media attention just to me is unbelievable.
No, nobody. I put about it on my Instagram. I've been talking about it with my friends. Not a clue. It's like news to them that these hearings were even happening. It was news to them that information was being collected, that there was a committee on this, and absolutely news to them that there was even a hearing taking place at all. And even just to Google, remember earlier this morning when we were trying to find it, how long it took us to find where we'd be able to watch it.
Yeah, it's our job, right? Like, we've been monitoring this, like hawks.
Yeah, we've been tracking it. I've been, every day checking any new articles coming out. The fact that we didn't even know that there was a hearing happening, till yesterday, that the first hearing was scheduled for today. I mean, it's just, it's being so hidden or, swept under the rug in such a way that it's hard to even get information on it. And nobody's reporting on the hearings at all.
No.
I've been checking Twitter. Nobody's mentioned it.
Yeah, I did the Bear Wozniak show today. I said, Bear, we don't show up on Palm Sunday. I'm not interested in being there on Palm Sunday. I want to be there on Good Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And, the fact that these hearings didn't get the coverage they deserve, well, hopefully when they drag the Secretary of State and the Secretary of Defense there and the Director of CIA, when this happens, and maybe Fox News will cover it today. But this is why you guys need to, A, subscribe to the Jason Jones Show, B, give us 5 stars and write a review. And don't base a review on this show, because I think this show is just an angry man yelling with the sidekick Marilis here. Give us 5 stars and nice review.
We're not saying anything that isn't objectively true. This is what's been happening for the last, since August 2021, that you've been at it. That's what I just kept thinking about too, is like, I didn't join you until December, but I remember your Facebook post, and now hearing, the witnesses talk about their experience with it, specifically Franz Wong and Lieutenant Colonel Mann. Lieutenant Colonel Mann talking about his friend committing suicide in that motel. You've talked about that.
Yes. Okay. I'm glad you brought that up. Okay. Here's another good point. So here's some main points. We talked about the FBI and NCIS not interviewing the Marines that witnessed the terrorist bombing bomber, followed him for days through their scopes. The next thing is the number. I wrote these down. I'm going to pull these up. The rise in suicides in the months after the war were unbelievable. And by the way, I was getting messages from despondent. You know, that's what drove this. It was first a friend in the film industry, and then it was Marine officers, Army officers, Special Forces guys calling me, begging me to help rescue their people. Despondent. And so I said, I did this first for a friend, then for my cohorts, my veteran community, and then eventually I really just fell in love with the Afghan community. But I felt like I was working against the clock to save veterans from committing suicide in the very first days and months, days and weeks, for sure. I want to give you these numbers here. Talk amongst yourselves, Mary. Let's give us some banter while I look this up.
I'm actually on Twitter right now trying to see what is being posted on this on the Afghan hearing from today.
All right. Well, there was an 85% spike in calls to the Veteran Administration suicide hotline in the wake of the withdrawal. That's unbelievable.
Yep.
That is just, to me, really unbelievable. But no, it's not unbelievable. It's absolutely believable. And here we go. So here's my notes. Congressman Meeks is shameless. Yeah, it starts out with Congressman Meeks. He kicks off the committee hearing, and it became very clear that this hearing from the Democrat perspective was they did their best with their cabal of witnesses and members to orchestrate a complete gaslighting of the American people.
Yeah.
And Meeks started it off.
He kicked it right off, right from the very beginning, from the moment he opened his mouth.
Yeah, from the moment he opened his mouth. When Congressman Mann, when Lieutenant Colonel Mann said, this reminded me of so many calls that I got. One of his calls he received from a friend was, "I'm not afraid to die. I just do not want to die alone." This was from an Afghan commando. Another call that he got, "My daughter has been trampled, sir. She is barely breathing." So guys, in the days, we only had 2 weeks for the most part to get people on these planes, and then there were going to be no more planes. A lot of groups were daydreaming about planes after the U.S. left, but we knew that wasn't going to happen, so we were building overland routes. People would be in line at Abbey Gate for hours and days, and the Taliban would walk up and down the lines. At one point, I was on the phone with an evangelical pastor whose son was shot in the stomach for no reason at point-blank range.
Mm-hmm.
And he had his wife and 7 children, and he had to make the decision. Do we all stay here and we take our son to the hospital, or does our son die and we get on the plane? Because he'll bleed out and die. And they made the decision to stay, and we never heard from them again. These were the kind of calls.
I remember that. I had just started working for you.
Okay, here it is. 74% of Afghan veterans said they feel betrayed by how we left Afghanistan. And calls to the VA suicide hotline spiked 82% in the weeks and months after the Afghanistan withdrawal. And then this one man testified. It was his son that committed suicide because he couldn't bear it anymore?
I think it was his friend that committed suicide.
His friend? Okay.
Yeah. In a hotel. It was his wife. His friend's wife called him and said that her husband had committed suicide.
Quite tragic. Then, you had this guy. His testimony was so absurd. This Cicilline guy. God forbid you're a member of Congress. But then, how about this?
When he referred to the Afghans as non-white Afghans, that's when I was like.
Cicilline said that. I didn't catch that. What did he say?
Yeah. Well, he called them non-white Afghans.
What does that mean?
What Afghans out there are white? I mean, like, what are we, you know?
Well, the Afghans are amazing. You know, you have Afghans from, like, Nuristan that
right, but
are blonde hair, blue-eyed.
The buzzword.
Yeah, no, that's the thing. Everything for them is politics and buzzwords. And it's funny you should bring up buzzwords because Hannah Arendt talked about in Eichmann in Jerusalem. Hannah Arendt is the great Jewish German emigre who wrote on tyranny, genocide, and war, and ideologies of evil. And she talked about how she didn't call them thugs. She said they're just the banality of evil. They're just banal. They're stupid. They're just dumb, really. And the Jewish community was so mad at her. She's Jewish, but they were mad at her in the 40s and 50s because she said, look, they're not monsters. They're thoughtless imbeciles. And don't make them out to be heroically evil. They're not. They're just stupid. And you can spot them because they speak in cliches, like non-white. What does this have to do with anything? I didn't catch that Cicilline brought that up. I just know that he didn't even have the good sense to, like, affect that he cared at all. Like, he just clearly could care less. But the other thing I got from this, again, big pinning and big strokes, Democrat members of Congress generally have no skin in the game of this country. The only members there that seemed to have veterans in their family or were veterans themselves were the Republicans. Then you had Congresswoman Wagner from St. Louis, from Missouri, I believe.
Yeah.
Catholic. She's a Catholic. And her son was an Army Ranger who fought in Afghanistan. So she has skin in the game. So she's taking this very seriously.
Yep.
All right. Congressman.
I loved how the beginning of her statement, she was like, I just like to point out the title of this hearing. You know?
Yeah, because they wanted to talk about everything else.
Everything else. I both want to see what's coming, but also not at the same time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we know. It's Trump said it at CPAC, retribution. We need retribution. People need to go to prison.
It's more than just accountability. Accountability, yes.
Yeah.
But there also needs to be retribution. You're right.
There needs to be legitimate retribution. So the people need to be punished. And just like with J6, we had exculpatory evidence being hidden intentionally that sent people away to prison. They need to be prosecuted. You guys are going to think I'm naive or you're going to think I'm not being serious. 6 months ago, a year ago, if you asked me 2 years ago, two years ago, Marilis, or Marilise, as everyone else in the world calls you. you asked me, do the people of the left care about the environment? I'd say they do. Do they care about women? They do. Do they care about minorities? They do. Do they care about the LGBTQ plus ad infinitum? They do. I'd say, but the unintended consequences of their policies hurt the people they care about is what I would say. Here's what we know. Here's what the train derailment taught us. Here's what the blowing up of the Nord Stream pipeline taught us. Released more plant food into the atmosphere, which is what carbon dioxide is. It released more plant food into the atmosphere than any human event in history. That's interesting. Yeah, that's something we might be upset about if we really were worried about carbon dioxide getting into the atmosphere. We should be really mad at these anti-environmentalist Ukrainian supporters that blew up the Nord Stream pipeline. They did not care about the pollution of the rivers, lakes, and streams in the wake of the derailment. Not a peep. When we were rescuing people from Afghanistan, you know this, we were representing people that worked for leftist groups. Leftist groups promoting reproductive freedom, i.e. abortion in Afghanistan. We helped evacuate. Sheepishly, some group came to us and said, will we rescue this LGBTQ plus dude? And we did. These guys got notes from their employer that said basically, peace out, gotta go, it's gonna be tough, don't write back, it was nice knowing you. So what I've learned, they don't care about women because they clearly don't care about the women of Afghanistan. They don't care about the Hazara women. They don't care about the environment. They don't care about anything but being pious to the gods of the city and not getting out of line. Just marching in formation, vaccine, mask, appropriate cliches at the appropriate time. Don't worry about poisoning of our rivers, lakes, and streams. Don't worry about menacing, fighting the Russians to the last Ukrainian. Don't worry about the catastrophe of 20 million Afghans starving to death. Don't look over there. I think that in this country, there's just two groups of people left. People that are authentically committed to the common good, that really are mostly conservative, but span the political spectrum, but they're all just called conservative today. Even the left will call them conservative. If you're for free speech, like Joe Rogan, who was a socialist and voted for Bernie Sanders, they call him an alt-right extremist. So basically, they're those who care about free speech, the environment, peace. They want peace, and they want everyone to be safe. They care about women. They care about everybody. Yeah, they don't like all the labels, but they like all the people. And then there's just the pious mob. That's it. That's America today. That's the political spectrum. There's the pious mob that will eat you alive. And there are those that are called the right-wing extremists that are mostly conservative, down-home, normal Americans. But they really do kind of transcend. Jordan Peterson's not a conservative in the 1990s. He's a sensible liberal professor. In the 1990s, Joe Rogan would be a leftist dude.
Yeah.
You know, he would be a left-wing comedian. Today, he's an alt-right extremist. How's this?
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. Jamie Dimon, forgive my rant, today Jamie Dimon came out and said, basically, I'm only investing in California and Texas. This was big. Did you see that?
No, I didn't see that. That's huge, though.
Yeah. Chief Executive Officer of Chase. When Jamie Dimon speaks, people pay attention. He's not Tucker Carlson, guys. And he said J.P. Morgan isn't done building in Tampa. They have more employees now, J.P. Morgan, in Texas than New York. And he said that New York is not people-friendly or business-friendly.
That's very accurate.
So Jamie Dimon, the head of Chase. By the way, Chase Bank canceled J6 defendants' bank accounts. And they canceled Ambassador Brownback's bank account. But yet now he sounds like an alt-right. I guess now Jamie Dimon's. I guarantee you, tomorrow, Google Jamie Dimon, it will say alt-right extremist. I'm going to do that right now. Yeah. Hold on. Jamie Dimon, alt-right extremist. Let me see. Sorry for that rant, Marilis.
No, I appreciate your rant because it's really putting words to whatever, you know, what I'm feeling inside, what I'm thinking. I'm a slow processor, as you know. And probably reading through these tweets is not helping either.
Okay, did you come across any good tweets?
Yeah, well, Fox News tweeted about it.
How many likes and shares did the tweet get?
Not many at all. But of course, all these woke accounts are tweeting horrible, horrible things.
Tell me what the woke accounts are saying.
Let me read you the one that I just found extremely infuriating. NPR got 12 retweets. You know?
How is it that the Jason Jones Show and VPP has become the loudest voice in the world for the greatest genocide in modern history, the 3 million Uyghur in concentration camps, and we've been running the largest operation across Afghanistan? This is bizarre to me.
Bizarre.
How is it? Okay, go ahead.
Fox News got 400 likes.
Okay.
73 retweets. Which still is not a lot.
Well, but it tells you. I thought right-wing people didn't care about brown Muslims. They're liking and retweeting it and concerned. The NPR audience, they're more concerned that I'm not vaccinated and it might be in their presence.
Listen to this. I mean, I don't even want to say.
No, say it.
Horrible, horrible tweet. I'm tired of hearing about Afghanistan. If the people of Afghanistan, after 20 years of having U.S., having boots on the ground, and providing training, wouldn't fight like the Ukrainians are fighting for their country. Time to go.
Okay, Ukraine, take note. You are going to lose this war. And they're going to blame you for losing the war that you should have never fought. But NATO pushed you, pushed Russia, and pushed Russia, and pushed Russia, and hid behind you. And in 2 years, they're going to blame you for losing to the largest land army in the world with the largest nuclear arsenal in the world. This is it. They blame the victim. We did a $2 trillion grift in Afghanistan. James Biden, I know more about Iraq, Joe Biden's brother, pocketed $3 billion in Iraq to rebuild for rebuilding projects. Never even sent a project manager to the country. Nothing was built. So we at $2 trillion, we weren't spending money in Afghanistan. We were laundering money in Afghanistan.
Yep.
We could have left in the winter. Could you imagine if we pulled out in February? There were lots of ways we could have left to prevent the collapse of the country.
Yeah.
Any more tweets? Now, can you tell the ideology of the person that tweeted that?
I mean, he has 11,000 followers.
Okay.
Definitely liberal woke. Because in his bio, it says, block MAGA. MAGAs.
Yeah, he could be a David French, you know, Republican.
It's
he could
not, be like one of those, doesn't have a real picture.
Yeah, a hero.
Yeah, but has, he's a hero. A good amount of followers.
Yeah, he's a hero. Okay. Don't you love the empathy of the left?
Oh, gotta love it. I mean, this really is, this tweet, I mean, I can agree with it wholeheartedly when he says, Biden's catastrophic withdrawal from Afghanistan is the darkest failure by an American commander-in-chief. He couldn't have said it better. This person.
Yeah, I like that.
You know? Because it's true. It's the most dishonorable thing a sitting president has ever done.
Okay, let's see what NBC has to say. Veterans deliver emotional, scathing testimony about disastrous withdrawal. Good job, NBC. Okay, good. Good. Good for you. No, I mean, I give it to NBC. It's true.
Yeah.
A Marine sergeant who was nearly killed in the deadly terrorist attack during the chaotic 2021 withdrawal gave powerful emotional testimony.
He did. His testimony, I mean, I had a golf ball in my throat the entire time.
Okay. See here
when he was talking.
Well, this is the first hearing. GOP to zero in on Biden's handling. And okay, this is from a day ago. What's amazing is there's just not that much.
There's not, and it's not getting a lot of retweets or likes. You know these tweets.
First
and
okay, go ahead.
I was gonna say one of the witnesses. I think it was. I wrote his name down. Aiden. What was it? Anyway, he was one of the witnesses, also had served in Afghanistan, when he said, you know, the war in Afghanistan is far from over for the people that are still there. And he couldn't have said it better. People ask us all the time, is it any better in Afghanistan? And I have to really remind myself that not everybody sees what we see or knows, you know what we know. Because we're always like, no, it's much worse.
Yeah, no.
Much worse.
There's 20 million people starving to death.
Starving to death. The winter.
Yeah, our biggest fear right now in Afghanistan is not the bad dudes. It's weather and starvation. Okay, I just got this. While I was talking to you, okay, this just came in. Okay, listen to this. Hi, Jason. My name is Blank, and I am Mr. Blank's case manager. He is in a situation and is in imminent danger. We need to talk to you ASAP. Here is my office phone number. Okay, so this is somebody that we're working for, and they are in real trouble. So, you know, this is what we deal with, guys. So this is today, 18 months later, and while I'm recording this podcast, an Afghan that we are assisting is in it, and it probably has to be moved to from one safe house to another safe house, or maybe even taken across the border. And this is what we deal with all day, every day.
This guy, Representative Corey Mills, tweeted exactly what you said on this podcast.
What did he say?
It's disgusting to see House Democrats make today's House Foreign GOP Afghanistan hearing about partisan politics and not the brave troops who put their lives on the line.
Yeah, I met him while he was running. This guy is something else. He was at a pregnancy center banquet that I spoke at, and he is something else. So that's it. I think we should wrap this up because this is what we got. The Republicans did not make it about partisan politics. They had every opportunity to do that. The Democrats made it into nothing but partisan politics, which I cannot wait. I'm going to do a show this week with Prince Wafa, an American citizen who was walked by the U.S. State Department 12 times to his death. They walked him up to Taliban checkpoints 12 times, promising there'd be a plane waiting for him, and there never was. We're going to talk to him. He's going to watch the hearings tonight. We're going to talk to him to get his feedback on it. But what I get from this, and I hope Afghans, I know a lot of Afghans are listening to this show. You're listening in Afghanistan, you're listening in Pakistan and other countries, and you're listening in the United States. I think it's very important you just go register Republican tomorrow. You walk down to, if you're in the United States and you're Afghan, you go to the local Republican Party and you just register and say, hey, listen, I want to be Republican because the Republicans cared about me. It was Republicans that tried to save me, and it's the Democrats that are going to use me. They're trying to use me. Because they use this broad immigration. They're using the Afghans to get policies that have nothing to do with Afghan SIVs. That's the one thing I got from this. And the other thing I got is just, I love our Americans are great and our veterans are unbelievable. Our veteran community is absolutely unbelievable. I can't imagine another country in the world where veterans would snap to action. You know, in those early days, weeks, and months, endless Zoom calls, countless signal channels, 24/7. You're dealing with former Delta Force guys, former generals, and former guys like me that were enlisted. I had 5 Article 15s for fist fights, infantrymen. And all coming together to serve the people of Afghanistan in an orderly, disciplined fashion. It's unbelievable. And someone needs to do a movie on that. It's comparable to the tiny little boats in Denmark. It's unbelievable. There's never been anything like it. But the Democrat Party is shameful, and it's embarrassing. I wish we had 2 beautiful parties, but we do not. And clearly, this was a catastrophe by design, and the lie to the American people continues. They did not expect us to win the House of Representatives. And when we when the Republicans take the White House back and we take the Senate, we have three branches of government. If they think they have trouble today, the trouble is really going to begin in 2 years. And I want to see people go to prison because they would put us to prison. I guarantee you they were hoping to put – when the DOJ came out in August of 2021 and said, we're going to investigate you veterans groups to make sure that you dot every I and cross every T as you seek to emergency evacuate people across country borders. You don't break any laws. Give me a break. Really?
In a heartbeat, they would have put you in jail.
100%. I said to my wife when I began this, I said, hey, if I do this, I asked her in early August, I said, hey, I really want to do this, but if I do this, you know that this could come with some serious legal repercussions. And she like laughed at me. What are you talking about? I said, trust me, our government's malicious. And but now there's too many people that have been rescued. There's too much light. But they did their best in this hearing to blame us. That was the unbelievable part.
Yes. The people who put their lives on the line, put their jobs, everything on the line, were the ones getting the blame.
Yeah, we know people who've been bankrupt.
Yeah.
We know people who cash out their retirement, veterans, to rescue
them. Put up a second mortgage on their home.
Yeah. Yeah, but they should have just called Biden and told him, don't do this. It's not going to work. And he would have said, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway. All right, Marilis, I'm going to wrap this up. Well, let's just do this. You and I are about to go to Spain.
Yeah.
Before we go to Spain.
Thanks for that, guys.
Yeah, so I'm going to go to, we're not going to say where, but I'm going to another Middle Eastern country. I have some meetings regarding the plight of some Afghans who are trying to help. And I'll be leaving that country. Are you going to Rome and then Spain, or are you going straight to Spain?
Yeah, I'm gonna go to Rome and then Spain.
Okay, so then we meet in Spain because, Marilis, you worked wonders with some of our donors and some of our friends to get free, the top-notch, best health care in the world, surgical care and whatever, and what else they need, to 19 girls that were wounded in a suicide bombing and at a school and a terrorist attack, and then a young woman who survived an assassination attempt.
Yeah.
So we'll meet in Spain to make sure everything goes without a hitch. Then I'm going to be going to the UK, where I'm meeting with members of parliament and some other folks, and then I'm going to a world boxing championship where a fighter, Dave the Great White Light, is going to be walking out in front of the world stage wearing the Vulnerable People Project logo on his shorts. As he fights for the cruiser championship of the world in Manchester, England. I'll be there for that. Then I'm flying to California for the birth of my granddaughter. So that's my next 3.5 weeks.
Yeah, you have a lot of travel. And I don't know, did you tell people? Well, we sent out that email, but Jason just had knee surgery like not even a week ago. Has it been a week already?
It's been a week today. So I went to therapy today.
Yeah.
And the lady just thought I was crazy. She's like,
a week ago had surgery. 2 days after your knee surgery, went and gave a speech somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And then now you're traveling to the Middle East, then meeting me in Spain. But I've just learned. I told you this, Jason. I've just learned. I don't question you. I just know that if you say you're going to do something, I'm not going to get in your way. And everybody else better stay out of the way, too.
Well, here's what I say. We run a human rights organization, and I looked around over 20 years ago, and I noticed all the groups were run by neoliberals or sentimentalists. But if I'm drowning or in a house on fire, I don't want a neoliberal or a sentimentalist coming to my rescue. I want a lunatic. I want a maniac. And so our work is to save people from violence, from starvation, from tyranny. So when people are like, you just had surgery and you're going to fly 15 hours to the Middle East? Yeah, of course. What do you want me to do? You know, I'm not a librarian. Nothing against librarians, but I'm not a librarian. Like, people will die, right? Like, so.
Yeah. Literally.
Yeah.
You're not even exaggerating. You're not even exaggerating when you say that.
Yeah.
That people will die.
So, of course, that's our job. And I love my job. I chose my job. And all sorts of people have crazy jobs like this. Truck drivers, firefighters, emergency room doctors, oncologists, you know, and they do what they got to do. And we do what we've got to do. And, you know, I get to go to, like, the United Lounge and eat little sandwiches. It's not that rough. And then, oh, no, I got to fly 15 hours. The hardest part about it is my attention deficit disorder, okay, my ADHD. I have to,
well, you're
plot.
Working that whole time. You're working that whole flight, though, because I've flown with you before, and you're working that entire flight.
No, I feel sorry for you guys on these flights, because what happens is I get like 12 hours to delegate tasks to our team.
Well, I just remember when you and I were flying back from Warsaw or Munich. It was one of the two. We were flying back to New York. And the entire time, every 3 minutes, I get a tap on my shoulder. Let's respond to this email, or, you know, what do we want to do about this? And just back and forth.
Oh, no. We did an emergency evacuation from Warsaw. We were flying from Warsaw to New York. I knew that we were going to lose Wi-Fi when we got over the Atlantic Ocean. So we were rushing to get the emails out and the plan distributed to all the members of our team before we hit the ocean.
Yeah.
And I was like, I don't want to lose this time. Like, this has to be done. By the time we got Wi-Fi back, the person had been evacuated from the country.
Yeah.
That's what that was.
I remember.
Yeah. And by the way, we didn't get the request for evacuation until we were already wheels up.
Yeah.
No, we were like, wheels up. I'm sorry. We were wheels up from Berlin or wherever in Germany, Munich.
Munich.
Wherever. So we were wheels up from Munich. And it was like, you're at 30,000. We're at 30,000 feet. You may now take out your laptops. And I took out my laptop. Ding, ding, bing, bing. Oh, we got to get an emergency rescue. I'm like, oh my gosh. Yeah. We've got like an hour and 15 minutes before we lose Wi-Fi. And yeah. We got everything out. And then by the time we got Wi-Fi back, when we hit the East Coast, the person was already evacuated. That's what I love about our job. You know, I love that, getting things done.
Same. I'm excited. I can't wait to hear about what's going to happen on these trips for you.
Yeah. So I'm bringing this podcast equipment, guys. So
he brings it everywhere,
but I normally don't even have the energy to do shows. I carry this.
Or the time. Not even the energy, Jason, the time. There are only 24 hours in a day.
Yeah, I'm going to carry this huge thing. So the podcast equipment goes in this bulletproof, bomb blast proof case. I can't wait to like walk into the Middle East with this, being a 6'3", 240-pound guy. You know, wearing my baseball cap, carrying this thing. They're going to be like, if these poor Middle Easterners have seen any Die Hard movie and they see a blonde guy carrying this thing that my podcast equipment's in, it's going to be like, oh no, this guy is a Russian assassin. It's just a very scary looking box. I'll say that.
And you're gigantic.
And I put like a Hawaiian flowery sticker on this big black pelican case to make it look less scary. It just is absurd. Yeah. It's absurd. And
at security, they're always like having to set it aside so they can look through it.
Yeah, but what I love is when it's someone into music and they're like, oh man, I love this soundboard. Like, this is amazing. What is this?
Yeah.
But so guys, I'm going to be bringing the podcast equipment. I know I haven't done a lot of shows lately. I always mean to. We have been swamped. I'm bringing the equipment. I'm going to be going to some Middle Eastern countries. I'm going to be going to Spain. I'm going to be going to London. And my hope is to get some great interviews while I'm there. That is my aspiration. I don't always live up to my noble aspirations, but I'm going to do my best. I'm hoping to interview John Zmirak and Prince Wafa before I go. So those shows will drop soon. And I want to ask all of you who are listening, you know, Marilis and I and the rest of the team are working very hard right now, very hard. And we are aggressively fundraising because you need your support. We may have already passed 1.5 million meals delivered. We definitely will hit 1.5 million meals by the first day of spring. We're drilling wells. We drilled a well today. I don't know if you know this, Marilis. I'm going to send you the photos. We drilled a well today. We're about to drill another well this week. We had graduations for one of our clandestine schools this week. We had we sponsored a poetry recital, a Dari poetry recital in Afghanistan, where the girls.
That was really beautiful.
If you follow me at the Jason Jones Show, or Marilis at Excellent on the Run on Instagram, you can see. I don't know if you shared the Marilis. You should. Just
I share them on my stories, but I'll create a highlight so they're saved on the highlight.
Yeah, you guys have to see. It's just absolutely
beautiful.
The highlight's
called PPP.
We've continued our securing parishes in Nigeria. We're expanding to cover 10 synagogues. The last 10 synagogues left in Nigeria. And as we work to stand with the folks the world has forgotten, we can only do that through you. Our team is unbelievably small. We have no endowments. We have no foundations, major foundational support. It is this podcast, as Marilis knows, she makes the phone calls. It's the audience of this show that has driven our work, that has made everything possible in the past 18 months. Please go to thegreatcampaign.org. If you could become a monthly donor, that is the key. You know, we're about halfway to our goal. Of our operating cost is about $20,000 a month. That's just that's the operating cost of our team and of all the costs of operating what we do. We're about $12,000 in monthly donors. When we get $20,000 in monthly donors, that's a big load off for me. And then everything beyond that is program expense, and direct relief efforts. So when we're already right now, we long ago blew through our reserve fund and our operating cost fund. So the whole team, every one of us knows this is a month-to-month show. We raise it, we pour it into the sea of sorrow and suffering. So we need your support. So go to thegreatcampaign.org, check out our website. You can go down and you can see the videos and the photos of what we do, because I know it sounds unbelievable. People's eyes glaze over when we talk about what we do because it doesn't sound believable. We document everything that we do so that you can know we do. We say we do wild things, and we do the wild things that we say we're going to do. And but we can only do that with your support. Do you want to add anything to that, Marilis? Thegreatcampaign.org. Do you want to add anything to that?
Yeah, no, they're great. And then check out, too, for any Afghans who are listening to this, our Afghan Ally Voices website.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. Afghan Allied Voices is a website we just launched where you can, it is very secure. This is an expensive website. And what makes it so expensive is I don't even want to get into how secure it is, but it's very secure. I feel
even
like
for us to be able to access it is super secure.
Yeah. So if you're an Afghan and you want to submit your testimony, either anonymous or if you want to publicly share who you are, you have the choice, and you can do it through text, through video, through audio, and then we'll present this to members of Congress, your stories, for their hearings. But it is so secure. Like, in it, I feel like I'm working for the NSA or something. And the reason we've made it so secure, what we have to do to access the entries is unbelievable. It's not, it's just you're not logging in to see who's submitted their information. It's unbelievably secure. And the reason we've made it secure is because we take the safety of our Afghan allies. It's our do no harm is our first rule. And so you can submit your testimony, and if you want to make it anonymous, you can be certain that it is the most secure site that you could submit your information to. There's no way it could be more secure. So I'll put the AfghanAlliedVoices.com in the show notes. I'll put thegreatcampaign.org in the show notes so you guys can donate. And I will also put the hearing in its entirety for those of you who, after listening to an hour and a half of us talk, say that's just not enough. I need 2.5 hours of listening to heroes talk interspersed with Democrats gaslighting and lying to the American people. It's quite startling. You can watch that as well.
Yeah.
All right, Marilis, the next time I'm going to see you is in Spain. Yeah.
Looking forward to it.
Okay. All right, guys. This has been the Jason Jones Show. Remember, go to iReadEpoch.com. Use the code Jason Jones, and you get your first month for $1, and then skip on over to thegreatcampaign.org and sign up to be a monthly donor. And we will be talking to you soon. Till next time, this was the Jason Jones Show.
This has been the Jason Jones Show, powered by Mudhouse Media.